Welcome to the CLS Experience. I'm your host, Craig Siegel. I'm a born and raised New Yorker who achieved success with multiple businesses, but I crave something deeper. So I dedicated myself to personal growth and transformation by revamping my mindset. I went from being unable to run a mile to conquering four marathons the following year. Now, I want to help others manufacture big breakthroughs of their own.
That's a game changer. That's really why, and that was why I originally, you know, I sort of shied away from the word psychology before.
Yes.
You know, because I'm very into neuroscience. Now, if you talk to a psychiatrist or psychologist who's simultaneously into neuroscience, you got a smart dude or guy or gal. But if you're not factoring neuroscience, you're ignoring extremely effective and extremely reliable hard science. And as you said, the smile triggers a neurochemical response in both you and your counterpart. Now, what the circuitry is that's triggered is up for debate. So what causes it and the fact that it happens are two separate things. It's a little like gravity. We don't know what causes gravity, but you still go splat on the pavement if you step off the top of a building.
On today's episode of the CLS Experience, we have a very special treat. He's the master negotiator and one of the top authorities in the world of business, negotiation, and communication skills. He served 24 years with the FBI, becoming one of the most decorated hostage negotiators on planet Earth. He's now using his expert experience in international crisis and high-stakes negotiations to help millions of people and businesses do the same. He's the founder of the Black Swan Group and is a Wall Street Journal best-selling author of the iconic Never Split the Difference. You'll see him commenting on CNN and Fox News, just to name a few, and he is a professor at Harvard Law and Georgetown University. He's just an overall juggernaut in all facets of life and a phenomenal human being. Please welcome the brilliant, dynamic, empathetic, and compassionate Chris Voss. How you doing, Chris?
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for the generous introduction. Much appreciated.
I did good by you?
You did good. Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to hearing what I have to say.
All right, good. Well, listen, it's your life. You wrote it, right?
Yeah, you know, we just keep putting pages in there, keep turning a page, keep adding to the journal, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I was telling you before we went on air, we just hit a million downloads. We have some mutual friends. The audience is going to fall in love with you 2 seconds. And the surprise when we drop this, the CLS book club is about to begin and your book is going to be one of the first ones that we read. So we're super excited about that. The audience always loves to get a little bit of a background story and so forth. But before we dive in there, we're going to start off. We're going to get a little weird. You ready for me, Chris?
All right. Throw me some curveballs.
What is your superpower?
Wow. When I'm paying attention, reading emotions.
Ooh, that makes perfect sense based upon your body of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. Describe yourself in 3 words.
Deeply flawed human.
I've asked some of the most successful people on the planet that question, but that could be my favorite answer yet. We're all flawed, right?
Yeah, you know, man, and that, you know, that's one of the things that I really learned about success, you know, quote success. Ferris's book, Tools of the Titans.
Great one.
I was looking at the beginning of it, and he writes, like, look, all of these people out there, they got significant flaws. They're not succeeding because they're flawless. They're succeeding because they navigated their flaws. And to me, that sort of demystified success and started to take people off a pedestal. Nobody should be on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Because we're all flawed.
100%. And we're all sinners saved by grace, so to speak, depending upon, you know, what you believe in and so forth. But we're all flawed characters. All the what we could do is just strive to be the best version of us every single day.
Amen. Yeah, make it count.
That's it. Like we're going to do with this interview right now. And, you know, I like to use a scarcity mindset. That word could be trimmed as negative. But I want to just treat this like we don't know what tomorrow brings and just give it everything we got. So let's make it count for sure. I love that.
Amen.
What's something weird about you, Chris, that a lot of people might not know?
Wow. It's probably a long list of weird. Right? Wow. Weird. I don't know. I mean, I've embraced most of my weirdness. You know, it no longer jumps out at me.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're gonna have to let me circle back on that one. You stump me. You stump the joke, man. You stump me.
Wow. I'm gonna go ahead and receive that compliment. Let me ask you this: if there was a wedding that you were at and the music came on, are you the first or the last one on the dance floor?
You know, my earlier days, it would have been the first one on. These days, unless my girlfriend Wendy's with me, I'll get drug out on the dance floor by somebody else who's tired of sitting me sit there and watch.
Okay. But what if there's a U2 song playing?
Yeah, now U2, I'll probably start rocking in my seat. I'm a very big U2 fan for a whole bunch of reasons.
I know you are. What's your favorite song?
Elevation.
Love that. Yeah, classic Bono. What an icon.
Agreed. Yeah, exactly. Good human being. And one of the most things I respect about those guys the most is they've stuck together.
Yeah.
I mean, how many bands have broken up?
Those
guys realize that they need each other, and they've stuck together.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Yeah, that's gripping. I love that. This is an interesting question, and I'm so curious to hear your answer because, like I said, I asked all the greats, and there's always a different answer to this one. Based upon the season that you're currently in, I know that changes over time. What is your definition of success, Chris?
Yeah, well, it would probably be very close to what you were talking about earlier. Like, I'm looking to get just a little bit better every day, looking to be smarter today than I was yesterday. You know, so if I'm getting smarter, I'm succeeding. You know, if I'm having a positive impact on the people around me, I'm going to make mistakes. I'm never going to stop doing stupid stuff. You know, but if I continually make the same mistake, that's, you know, now I got a problem. I'm trying to think, you know, gentleman runs a conference for lawyers out of Atlanta. His name will come to me in 5 minutes. One of his phrases are, if you aren't embarrassed at who you were a year ago, you haven't learned enough over the last year. So yeah, just learning is succeeding. Just keep learning.
Yeah, I never heard that or at least articulated like that. That's beautiful because it's so true. Like, and I like to journal a lot. I'm a big journaler. I'm curious to hear if you are as well. But I always do a specific entry as we get closer to year's end. And it's so interesting, like just to see where my headspace was just a year ago as we went into New Year's, like a whole different person. And I'd like to believe for the better and just a lot of growth and so forth, a lot more awareness. But so true. You grow every single day.
Nutrition Solutions offers the best healthy meal prep options for health, wellness, weight loss, and improved performance. The customer service and support at Nutrition Solutions is unbelievable and second to none. And when I travel for my marathons, the meals are waiting at my hotel. I don't even have to break a sweat. Even their protein donuts and breakfast items are made with fresh, organic ingredients. I love Nutrition Solutions' reliability, quality, and all-around lifestyle that they represent, which is world-class. To get both physically and mentally fit, go to NutritionSolutions.com and use promo code CLS25. Thank me later, you dig.
Yeah, you know, and just a little bit. I mean, you know, not a lot, just a little bit. You'd be shocked at how far you can get in a short period of time, just trying to get a tiny little bit better. Then plus, you got a bad day, you were sick, you drank too much the night before, and you got a hangover, you had to punt the whole day. You know, then the day doesn't feel like that much of a loss. It's easier to pick yourself back up and start over the next day, because if you want to get a lot better every day and you lose a day, you're like, then now you start kicking yourself, which does you no good, for having blown the day. So, you know, a little bit better every day, you know, then you could pick yourself back up when you lose a day.
That's it. This is just riveting. And I love that you said that. And also a good tool for the audience to use if you're having a bad day, and something I know you're big on is gratitude, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a gratitude, there's a whole variety of like exercises to make you happier and simultaneously more effective and help you enjoy the day more. And gratitude is one of those things. I mean, I typically start out with a brief gratitude journal every morning.
Yeah. And what do you do? You just says what you're grateful for that day?
Yeah, or in the moment. I don't know, remember where I got the idea, whether who it was from, whether it's from Tony Robbins or from whom. Trying to be grateful for a lot of little things, and which then makes life overall that much more satisfying. Like some morning, I'm grateful for the socks I have on.
Yeah.
It in a really weird way, the littler the thing is, then the less you take everything for granted, which I think is a key. And I didn't really think about that much till Tom Brady. They were talking about winning the division, Tampa Bay Bucks, the other day, and they
Yes.
were asking him, is he proud of it? He wasn't proud, but he was also enjoying it. He said, I don't take anything for granted. And I thought, ooh, there's an additional, that's a different take. Not to be proud of it, but to appreciate it, be grateful for it, don't take it for granted. And I thought that was an interesting insight. So I'm trying to do that, find different ways to do that throughout the day.
That's gold, my friend. I'm a big Brady fan. Who doesn't love a winner? And obviously the hard work and the dedication that he pours into it, even into his mid-40s and so forth. But I never heard that spoken like that too. And I imagine his thought process was, is he never arrived. So this way he doesn't get complacent because he's focused on the next goal. But at the same time, he's going to take a second to celebrate the small wins, such as winning the division.
You hit on something that I think is really important, letting go of the idea of arrival is really critical in anybody's real growth and success journey. And that was something that I was wrong about when I was younger. And I look back on, I'm like, look, if you never arrive, first of all, it's a falsehood to ever arrive. And it's a complete myth. It's a falsehood. And secondly, then you continue to grow.
Yeah. What would you have done differently? You just would have had that mentality.
Interesting question. I don't know. I mean, by and large, there's not a lot that I would do differently other than, sometimes I describe it as being nicer or being more pleasant. I don't know that. I don't regret anything because I like who I am, and so my mistakes are a part of me growing. And they're really, I've done some stupid stuff.
Haven't we all?
I mean, for a lot of reasons, I'm not into regret because I
Same.
like my knowledge and where I am. But if I'd have done anything differently, I think I'd have probably, if you're arriving, then maybe you're taking it for granted. There were one or two critical moments, one in particular in my FBI career, I thought I arrived, and I was so wrong. And I think it probably caused me then to take the position for granted, which led to some serious mistakes.
Yeah. But maybe not such a mistake if we learn lessons from them and apply them.
I'm a big believer that every mistake that you make, the upside, the return on investment is probably worth probably 10x what the mistake costs you if you're willing to learn from it.
Yeah. I love the way you just worded that. It's so true. And that's why, like you said earlier in the conversation, life happens for us, right? Not to us. So anything that happens, we have the ability to absorb the knowledge and gain experience. And in essence, that's priceless.
Amen. Yep,
Yeah.
agree completely.
We're going to jump around a little bit. I know the audience is going to get such a kick out of this conversation. Just so much respect for you. One of the things that I heard you say recently, and I wanted to just ask you about it because it really hit home to me, was don't sacrifice the future for the present.
Definitely. You can get really seduced by short-term gain and just have it just kill you long term. So present temptations, definitely that, I can slaughter them on this deal. It's going to cost you a lot of money, create a lot of bad karma, which you are going to pay the price for. I could allow them to be deceived. I'm not the one that deceived them. you know, I know they've been deceived. I know that, you know, but it's to my benefit to let this go. Yeah, that's bad. Or I got your back till it's me or you, and then I no longer have your back. I mean, which is pretty much the definition of the vast majority of most go-betweens. Like, yeah, I'll look out for you unless I got to look out for me first.
Yeah, that's funny. That's great. I love this stuff. You were in the FBI for 24 years. Is that right?
24 years, yeah.
And how much of that time were you a hostage negotiator?
So I got trained as a negotiator 6 or 7 years in, 85 to 92. Yeah, about 7 years. And then most law enforcement agencies, the FBI has no exceptions, negotiators start out, it's an additional duty. So you know, you got a day job, if you will. So I started out, it was an additional duty like everybody else. And then, you know, it can take up more and more of your time. I was put in charge of a team in New York, and I ran the team in New York for several years. And then most organizations also have a key core group that are full-time that run everything. And I got my last 7 years in a bureau, I got promoted to that, the crisis negotiation unit that was at headquarters and Quantico. And then that was, you know, I ate, slept, thought negotiation for 7 years.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's a serious commitment. And obviously it's no easy task, especially when you're dealing with some high prolific situations and so forth. Is most of a negotiation psychology? Obviously, there's strategy and tactics, of course. Where does the psychology come into play?
Yeah, well, it depends upon your definition of psychology. I would say most of it is emotional intelligence.
Okay.
Yeah, psychology may or may not overlap with that, depending upon your definition of psychology, your thinking that went into it, you know, a whole host of things like that. You know, I see writings by psychologists and psychiatrists that it's clear their thinking hasn't evolved from their original ideas from 30 years ago. PhDs, but you know, they haven't evolved. They got ideas they're going to stick to. You know, Colin Powell once said, never let your ego get so attached to a position that if the position collapses, your ego goes with it. So that's like having an idea early in your career and sticking to it come what may.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of PhDs out there that have written books that are glued to an idea and they're never going to change their mind. So I'm giving you a long answer. Psychology,
no, I love it. Please.
And emotional intelligence, what's the overlap? I would say hostage negotiation, all negotiation is really emotional intelligence.
Yeah. So like what, for example, when you were doing the FBI stuff and a hostage negotiation, like what would be a scenario where you have to really up your game when it comes to emotional intelligence to make sure nobody gets hurt, but to kind of diffuse the situation?
Well, almost every siege has either an element of crisis intervention in some percentage. Like it might be 5%, it might be 95%. You know, what may look to be a total hostage siege could be all about crisis intervention. Conversely, something that might look to be all crisis intervention, like a guy who's threatening to jump off of a high object. If they're talking, that's really a bargaining scenario. So, the original question, I guess, was, you know, how do I keep my skills sharp? Forgive me. I went off on enough of a tangent.
No, it's okay. I'm just saying, like, how would you diffuse a situation utilizing your skills of emotional intelligence?
Yeah. Well, you know, you gotta listen first for negative emotions. And that was really, which sort of may lead into the question is how does hostage negotiation, what does that have to do with anything in normal life?
Yeah.
Like we were taught two things in hostage negotiation, you know, sort of we called it reflecting emotions, respond to the emotions, label the emotions. One of our skills was emotion labeling. Label whatever emotion you heard. Number one. Number two, look for the loss. probably experienced some sort of a psychological loss in the last 24 to 48 hours, look for recent loss first, the emotions and the recent loss. Now, what we didn't realize was if it's in a siege, the emotions are always going to be negative. So we're really going to start with the negative. In point of fact, that's where you start in human interactions because humans are wired to be negative across the board.
75%, I think you always say, right?
Exactly. I'm a complete believer that our default wiring is 75% negative. That's survival wiring, how we wake up in the morning, absent a gratitude exercise or some other practice like that, which is mental hygiene, because we will lapse back into the negativity.
We could block out the interference.
Yeah, exactly. Interference, clouding our judgment. And then look for the loss. Well, then Daniel Kahneman, Professor Kahneman, comes along in 2002, wins a Nobel Prize in behavioral economics, lost things twice as much as an equivalent gain. Sounds innocuous enough, but what does that mean? What that means is loss is the overriding decision-making factor in human choices. Loss. Not the only one, just the biggest one. And then when I found that out, I'm like, oh, wow, this default training for hostage negotiation worked not because it was a hostage scenario. It worked because they were people. And people make up their mind pretty much along the same lines based on our wiring, not based on the external circumstances.
Yeah, this is crazy in the best way. Like, it's so interesting to me, and just understanding like the emotional intelligence and stuff like that. And what I think is so fascinating, besides the many things, the plethora of things about you, is you've been able to apply all those tools and the emotional intelligence that you utilized in that career, that season of your life, into a lot of the stuff you're doing now, such as the book and obviously sales negotiations. And I just think that's so fascinating. What's the most common thing that is useful for you in both the FBI hostage negotiations and also maybe negotiating a big business deal? Like, what are some similarities?
Well, probably the first biggest obstacle to overcome and the biggest single accelerator for all negotiators is coming to grips with the word yes and no. Like, everybody thinks yes is success, getting to yes. You know, everybody has historically taught that yes is success. And then by definition, no is failure. And if you get the opportunity to demystify both words, yes is not success. And therefore, no is not failure. I mean, that's the first big thing. And I remember that moment really clearly in my life. You know, I'm a hostage negotiator. I'm traveling all over the world because of that. I'm in airports because of that. I'm always checking out the business section in the bookstores. And I go walking through this airport, and right front center on a shelf is start with no. And I literally, I do a double take. I'm like, wait, hold on. Start with no. I thought that was the worst thing you could hear. Jim Camp's book, 2002. And I'm like, and he didn't, and we took his idea and we advanced it, because he didn't really start with no. What he did was, in his negotiations as a salesperson, it's a business book, he's an extraordinarily successful salesman and coach. He says, just let the other side know it's okay to say no. Start out by saying, like, all right, it's all right for you to say no at any time. Stop me at any time, throw me out. You know, and then he said, this increases the chances that they'll agree if you preserve their autonomy. And then in his book, he says, people will die to preserve their autonomy. I think I laughed out loud, probably, you know, like some psychopath in a bookstore, people wondering what I'm laughing at. Because I thought, yeah, that's why we got hostage negotiators to begin with, because people will die to preserve their autonomy. And here Camp is saying this applies to everybody, not just terrorists and hostage takers. And so that, you know, that was really the beginning and, you know, the first big thing for any negotiators, demystifying both of those words.
Yeah.
And then learning now how do we actually use no as an accelerator? That's the crazy thing.
Yeah, this is really exciting to me, because I love the connection right? And you were able to convert it and translate it into all this stuff. And also in regards to sales, like, you're the master negotiator, but everybody is always selling something or themselves to someone at any time. And I think there's a big misconception. Yep. I'm sure I'm not the first person to tell you that. Like, people think that if they're not a salesman or a saleswoman, that being efficient in sales doesn't apply to them, but that couldn't be further from the truth, right?
Agreed. Yeah. Among the people, me and my team, and you know, you very kindly keep attributing this to me. But the real adaptation of all this is happened with my team and the core thinkers of my team. My son, Brandon, brilliant negotiator.
He's awesome.
Derek Gaunt and really Sandy Hine. You know, our new masterclass, that's why the new masterclass session that we put out has all of them in it. Because, you know, it's our team. You want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go as a team. So I brought Masterclass approached me to do another course. And I said, you know, we got to bring my team in because these are brilliant people who I learn from. And so really it's a team approach. And then to your original point, you know, everybody's selling. Daniel Pink, we all read Daniel Pink's stuff. And I think his book is To Sell as Human. I got it on a bookshelf back here. I think I got all his books. But Pink says that 90% of our interactions are non-sales selling. You know, because he wants us to be alert to the fact that everybody is selling. We would say that everybody's negotiating, fine line between the two. But yeah, all the time, constantly, all the time.
At the line in Starbucks, right? At the doorman downstairs in my apartment building. Everywhere, negotiating a phone bill, whatever the case may be. Literally, the scenarios almost every single day for people.
Yep. Yeah. And in all the little interactions. You know, I'm at the airport the other day at United negotiating with one of their baggage people to come home and get my bag. You know, because, you know, they got this efficient process set up where they don't talk to you, which is very overwhelming for their people because they are great at cargo and they're great at moving objects. And it's a little confusing for, you know, for high maintenance types like me. So I'm trying to get their person to come over and grab my bag and throw it on a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
That's a negotiation.
Of course. Yeah. And talk about the effect that neuroscience has with just a smile and some body language.
That's a game changer. That's really why. And that was why I originally, you know, I sort of shied away from the word psychology before.
Yes.
You know, because I'm very into neuroscience. Now, if you talk to a psychiatrist or psychologist who's simultaneously into neuroscience, you got a smart dude or guy or gal. But if you're not factoring neuroscience, you're ignoring extremely effective and extremely reliable hard science. And as you said, a smile triggers a neurochemical response in both you and your counterpart. Now, what the circuitry is that's triggered is up for debate. So what causes it and the fact that it happens are two separate things. It's a little like gravity. We don't know what causes gravity, but you still go splat on the pavement if you step off the top of a building. You know, one of my favorite neuroscientists, I listen to this guy all the time, and I consider him a friend. You know, we've met, we exchange information, Andrew Huberman. I also like Stephen Kotler. Stephen Kotler's into flow. It's not particularly as scientific as Huberman. You know, and so on Huberman's podcast, he says, you know, for all you people out there that are saying there are mirror neurons, which is what we talk about all the time, if I smile, you smile because of your mirror neurons, triggered a chemical reaction which induced a smile in you, or at least induced at least somewhat of a state change. And I say that's mirror neurons. So one of Huberman's early podcasts, he says, I got news for you guys. There's no such thing as mirror neurons. I'm like, oh, man, you're killing me. And then he says, there is something which we haven't really defined, which is kind of emotional resonance circuitry, and we don't know exactly what it is, and it does the same thing. And I'm like, all right, I don't care what you call it.
Right.
You know, you could call it Make America Great Again. I don't care what you call it. It works. Yeah, you know, so I'm worried about, as a layman, I'm worried about the effect. So I know, you know, I will achieve a goal using appropriate good naturedness and appropriate humor, I don't really care what the circuits are called that make it work. I just know it's one of the ways I gain an edge.
Yeah. Gain an edge. That's where we would drop the mic, but I want to continue the conversation. This is awesome. So much love and respect for you. And the only negative I got going on is we don't have 10 hours to chat. And as the audience will see, is you got to surgically remove the smile from my face. Maybe I'm just mirroring his neurons, but Chris is awesome. I heard you talk about reverse psychology. Why would you do business with me? Something along the lines. Yeah. Why is that so effective?
Yeah, well, you know, and a why word is really a tactical empathy surgical strike. All right, so sort of universally, and one of the big advantages I have as a hostage negotiator is literally negotiated crisis situations all over the world. I already knew that why makes everybody defensive. Like, I have seen it in Baghdad, in Bogota, and in Brooklyn, and in the Bay Area. You know, let's go for the B's, alliteration. You ask somebody why, it creates defensiveness. It's a poking of them. Yeah, you know, again, my son Brandon is brilliant in spite of me, in spite of being his father. The dude is brilliant anyway. His opinion on this is that every human being, when we were 2 years old, wherever we were, anywhere in the world, when we broke something, the nearest adult jumped up, pointed at us and said, "Why did you do that? Why did you do that?" And so, you know, you get it beat into your head, whether you're in Baghdad or Bogota or Brooklyn or the Bay Area. Then when somebody asks you why, you just screwed up and you get defensive. So now you ask me about the tactical, what I labeled the tactical empathy surgical strike. The only time that making you defensive is if you defend interacting with me. Because that encourages a relationship. So if I say, look, why in the world would you ever listen to a hostage negotiator? If you got a reason, and that's also part of the test, you're going to give me that reason. Well, you know, hostage negotiators, you guys have negotiated all over the world. You understand crises. You understand the issues across culture. And I'm like, all right, cool. You just gave me my value proposition. And I didn't have to say it.
Yeah. This is just straight up gold. And also, I wonder if this relates to this. You talk about like being corrected, or correction is an addiction, something along those lines.
If you can allow yourself to be corrected, like if you can get over most people's normal embarrassment is, if I'm being corrected, I was wrong, I'm humiliated, I'm embarrassed, I'd rather die than be embarrassed or wrong. But the other side loves it. Like I can trigger stuff out of you that is against your interest to tell me based on a correction. And you won't regret having told me, you know, because whoever coined the phrase, people don't remember what you said, they remember how you made them feel.
Yeah.
That correction is so addicting and so satisfying. You will never regret having told me something you shouldn't have told me.
Yeah. This is awesome. I got to ask you, because you mentioned books a couple times. How often do you read?
Like, I'm soaking stuff up constantly.
Yeah, imagine.
You know, and, you know, based on the nature, sort of how the team, how we advance our thinking on a regular basis, I have more off contact time than anybody else does. And I would say contact time might be actual. I'm instructing less than the other guys are. I'm not coaching at all. You know, at this point in time, for the preservation of our team, I'll only coach in exchange for equity. You know, you can't buy coaching time with me, but then that gives me time to read. So I read more than anybody else does. I'm listening to Huberman's podcast constantly, Huberman Labs. You know, I read Eric Barker's blog, Barking Up the Wrong Tree. I may not finish a book, but I am hitting selected passages from books on a constant basis and using it to inform our thinking. I'm looking for as much cutting edge stuff as I could get that helps us learn and progress, which is why the Black Swan method now is much more sophisticated than what it was 2 years ago, because we got a team contributing to the evolution of our thinking.
Yup, that's correct. Billionaire Mark Cuban is motivating entrepreneurs daily with his Three Commas line of apparel, accessories, and coffee. Three Commas has the softest suede crew tees, a great line of accessories, and the best direct trade Colombian coffee. Join the Three Commas Club on Instagram at Three Commas or visit their website, threecommas.com, to learn more. Thank me later, you dig? Tell the audience, in case they might not be familiar, what the Black Swan Method is.
You know, it is the application of our tools. You know, it started a long time ago with hostage negotiation, tactical empathy, and we've been adapting it as it's the most cutting edge set of emotional intelligence, empathy tools out there that you will ever find. And because we are driving to learn faster than anybody else, a number of people have said, you know, the only real sustainable competitive advantage is to learn faster than your competition. We're driven to learn. We will always stay ahead of everybody out there. We got between my team, you're not going to find another team as driven to learn and adapt. Our combination of you know, learning and applying exceeds anybody else's combination. That's our secret sauce. Nobody will ever beat us.
I love that. And I love the self-belief and the confidence, and nobody would bet against you. Depending upon like which different industries you're serving or helping out, whether it be real estate or insurance or something else, do you change your approach, or the core values are the same with all of it when it comes to negotiating and sales and stuff like that?
Great question. The core values remain the same. And I was just having a conversation with one of our Black Swans earlier today. We don't change, we evolve. Like, you know, if it doesn't fall within the confines of tactical empathy, you know, that's where we live. You know, there's other things that occasionally work. We don't begrudge people that. It's not within a system. So, for example, one of the things that we've created just in the last probably 2 years is something we call thought-shaping questions. Now, it sort of started with calibrated questions, and within the discipline, Brandon came up with it when he was fixing a flight that he missed. And it's now, you know, we got a method for getting free suite upgrades in hotels. if they got a suite, we're going to get it for free. We're going to get it. They don't always have a suite. And so then you got to ask in a way that you're not confined to that ask. You know, never be so sure of what you want that you wouldn't take something better. But it's built around something called a thought-shaping question. Brandon executes it one day. When he missed a flight, he calls me happy as a clam. And I'm like, look, dude, you missed a flight. How could you be so happy? Well, he's enamored with the way he fixed it. And he said, and I used a calibrated question. And I said, well, you didn't use a calibrated question. You invented an entirely new Black Swan tool. So I would call that an evolution versus a change. And what he did was it was a genius combination of a calibrated question and a label. And he put the two together because he sensed he needed to ask the question and deactivate the negative emotion simultaneously. And so we don't change, but we do grow. We do evolve. I think we get smarter.
I'm so fascinated by how strategic you are. Do you play chess?
No, and here's why. The chess board, first of all, you can see all the pieces. That isn't real life. Secondly, the biggest thing is you move a piece and no other piece moves. Like if all the chess pieces were spring loaded so that every time you moved a piece, every other piece on a board moved a little bit with each move, now you're closer to life because, you know, we're all connected by this web of tension. Herb Cohen called it a web of tension way back when, which is emotions, which is what makes emotional intelligence so important. There's this web of tension, this web of emotions that we're all interconnected with. And so every move that you make is going to increase or decrease the tension, and all the pieces on a board are going to move. That's why chess is not a great analogy.
I love it. I never heard someone articulate like that, but hearing you say it, it makes perfect sense, because life's a little more unpredictable than seeing all the pieces on the board.
Exactly. Yeah.
Tactical empathy, those two words together, the way you say it, I mean, I can't get enough of it. How would you define that?
I would say it's applying neuroscience to empathy. Empathy is really demonstrating an understanding of the other side's perspective. Not agreeing with it and not pitching your perspective. Displaying an understanding of their point of view by articulating it. And it's seeing it from their position is only the first step. And a lot of people say empathy is the ability to see the other side's perspective. That's step one, but if that's the only step you take, it's inadequate. Now, what's tactical? The neuroscience wiring that you and I were talking about earlier in our conversation. If the brain is 75% negative and you have the best possible tool to defuse the negativity, tactically, you should start there. That's the accelerator. Instead of pitching gain or saying like, you know, it seems like you want to make a deal. Well, yeah, they want to make a deal, but they got reasons for not making the deal. So what's the tactical empathy change? Seems like you got some reasons for not making a deal. Boom. That is the fastest way to get rid of those obstacles. Bring them out in the open. Let them hit the light of day. Let them scatter like cockroaches when you put real solid sunlight on. I mean, that's really the approach.
Yeah. Put all the cards on the table. This is just gold. I absolutely love that. I'm laughing because this stuff is great. And I was on Wall Street for 10 years. So, like, you know, I have a sales background. But just the way that you articulate this stuff, like for the audience listening, this is so applicable and straight up just so valuable. And
thank
also,
you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for your time today, Chris. And also something that you always talk about is leaving every encounter with an elevated state than from before when it started. And I take pride in that as well. How important is that for you?
You know, that is, We call it the Oprah rule because it's so important. I think it's one of the reasons why Oprah Winfrey, a black female from low-income neighborhood in Chicago. I mean, look at the cards that she was dealt with to start with. How does she become one of the wealthiest, most successful, most well-regarded? That maybe that's a trifecta.
Well-respected.
Wealthy, successful, and well-regarded. You know, plenty of wealthy people that are not well-regarded.
It's true.
You know, how do you get there? How do you put yourself in a position where should you choose to wade into a presidential election gently, Barack Obama's first election, how do you become one of the most significant impacts on that election? Now, he probably would have got elected the first time anyway without her, but it didn't hurt.
It didn't hurt.
You know, her and her team has a rule. I've confirmed this with people that are very close to her. Always make people feel positive about the entire interaction, especially at the end. Always, always, always. Real simple rule, but and look at her success. The last impression is a lasting impression. There's dad out there that backs it up. But it's so underutilized. Everybody focuses on a first impression. And then they end up, you know, making some snarky remark at the end. Like, you just killed yourself. Like, the first impression is not a bad thing. But, you know, if you're gonna fail to use emotional intelligence afterwards, that first impression is completely lost.
Yeah. No, this is great. And everything that you just said is so true, especially with the emotional intelligence stuff. Like, there's so many takeaways from this stuff. Of course, I have to ask you, the book, Never Split the Difference, one of the most iconic books, especially from my generation. It's almost like a Bible, I would say, in some aspects. So I want to acknowledge you for writing that thing. You've changed so many lives with that. What was the process to get that book to come to fruition?
Yeah, well, I got out of the Bureau and a couple things happened, fell my way. I started teaching at the business school at Georgetown and, you know, with my son, Brandon, heavily involved in shaping the thinking and developing it. And everybody said, write a book, like as soon as I get out, everybody said, write a book. And there is something to that argument. You know, but Brandon and I didn't want to put a book out there until we felt like we had a system end to end. And so after we tested it and had proof of concept and really added to our thinking, we're like, all right, now we're ready to write a book. So we really, you know, again, you want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go as a team. Start to assemble a team. Hired and fired a total of 4 writers before the book came out. Got lucky to settle on a good agent early on, Steve Ross, critical part of the team. And then finally came to with Tal Raz, who's the master of this genre, the master of the business book is Tal Raz. There's nobody better out there as a business book writer. I wouldn't want him writing a pop-up children's book, but a business book genius. So Tal and Brandon and I collaborated on the book. Brandon is really acknowledged in the acknowledgments at the end, but he was there every step of the way. And so we got proof of concept. We felt we had a system. We went with Tal. Tal pointed out some gaps in our thinking, which is one of the values that I didn't expect. And we go like, nah, that's obvious. And he'd say, no, it's not, because it's not what is obvious to you is not obvious to the first time reader. We got to explain it a little bit better than just do it. And his thinking and forcing us to answer the holes was critical in making the book what it is.
Are you surprised by the enormous amount of success that it has, or not so much?
Yeah, you know, it's incredibly gratifying. I didn't, you know, everybody said, you know, it's going to have a shelf life. The sales are going to fall off the cliff. It's going to come a day when it's not selling as well. And one of the things Tal told us was like, look, you're going to have to be prepared to work hard. Do not expect your publisher to sell the book. Don't, you're going to have to sell the book, and you're going to have to keep selling it. And, you know, Brandon and I both are like, challenges to work hard. You're going to have trouble finding people that work harder than we do. So achieving the success that it's achieved is delightful. I don't know, surprised probably. But yeah, it's incredibly gratifying. It is literally in use globally, and people are using it in China and Pakistan and India and the US everywhere.
What was that? That's right. I can hear your thoughts. Have no fear. I'm going to tell you exactly where you can get weekly access to the CLS experience live in action. Drop in gems, nuggets, trainings, special celebrity and business mogul guest speakers, and maximum energy. We just launched the CLS membership. We have weekly Zooms with like-minded, growth-oriented juggernauts, networking and absorbing all the wisdom via weekly Zooms. Head to cultivatelastingsymphony.com and then bang, enter your new network today. Let's grow together. You dig? You being very humble, Chris, it's an instant classic, and it will live forever. And it will even get more prestigious as time goes on, in my personal opinion.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope so.
Yeah, it will. And my whole community is growing rapidly, and they're going to be diving into it in our CLS book club soon. So I'm going to help support as well, for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you personally, because something that you always mention, and I think this is really valuable for the audience as well, is it's always 3 choices: get better, get worse, or stay the same. Why is that little phrase so important for you?
Yeah, because and 2 out of 3 of those choices require effort. Negotiating is not riding a bike. It's a perishable skill. Whatever your sport is, you want to get better at it, you got to practice. You don't practice, the skills are going to erode. I don't care if it's shooting a gun, if it's golfing, you know, tiddlywinks. you know, Camp called negotiation a human performance skill. And I think a lot of people, I mean, I did this once, because this was also one of the things I talked about with the other member of the Black Swan team earlier today. Like when I volunteered on the suicide hotline, they trained me to a very high level, very high. The training was incredible. I finished the training sharp. And then I thought by simply applying it consistently that my skills wouldn't erode. You know, there's some application and some study. Both are required. Tiger Woods, when he was winning golf tournaments, went back and changed his swing and stayed on the driving range and a practice tees and a putting green. He didn't stop practicing, even though he was winning every tournament in sight. You know, you gotta do it, and you gotta spend some time getting better at it. My first year on a hotline, I didn't spend any time getting better at it. I just did it for a year, and when they evaluated me a year in a very brutal fashion, they pointed out to me all the bad habits that I'd picked up. So, yeah, I mean that's how you stay at the top of your game. You do it, you think about it, you study it, you do it, and you study it. One or the other exclusively is insufficient.
Yeah. This is gold, straight up. Yeah, your gems are absolutely priceless, brother.
Well, man, I think I'm all over the place on my answers. Like, can you ask me a question? Going off on tangents.
You know, usually we do like a background story and stuff like that, but straight up, this is so much more valuable. Just an unbelievable conversation about a lot of the nuggets that you talk about. I think that's what's going to make the biggest impact on the audience. And your answers are awesome, straight up.
Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely. One thing that you always talk about is curiosity and how important that is. Why is that so important to you?
Well, you know, I got to tell you something. I think Derek on our team has put the spotlight on curiosity more than anybody else. But curiosity is like the superpower because, number one, it's impossible to become angry while you're genuinely curious. So it keeps you from going into a bad state.
Interesting. Kind of like gratitude, but different.
Yes. Very similar. You're 31% smarter in a positive frame of mind. That stat is from Sean Acker, Harvard psychologist, did a fantastic TED talk, which I think is called The Happiness Advantage. One of the funniest ones you'll ever hear. That's the source of my stat. So if you're 31% smarter in a positive frame of mind, then by definition, when you're in a negative frame of mind, you're dumber. So curiosity is highly positive. You're smarter. And then, you know, another guy I'm reading, because you asked me about reading. Nassim Nicholas Taleb's 2012 book, Anti-Fragile. Fascinating concept. He coined the term. When you're anti-fragile, stress, bad things make you smarter because you learn. And he says that curiosity is an anti-fragile characteristic. So if you can get a curious mindset, like you have just got a competitive advantage over everybody else that's even in an average mindset. You're just giving yourself a big competitive edge.
Yeah. It makes sense to me because when I'm naturally curious and it always facilitates like the creative juices.
There's another reason. Amen. I love it. Yeah, there you go. Your creativity is fueled by it. Nice.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to ask you because a very popular trendy thing these days is like the quantum and the law of attraction and energy and all this stuff. Do you buy into that stuff? And do you believe in like the power of intention and stuff of that nature?
Yeah. Yeah. Same. Short answer is yes.
Yeah, me too. And I recently got really into it. And it's the first time that I've been able to facilitate real-time manifestations and stuff. And it's just, obviously, it's a whole nother conversation. We'll bring you back for a sequel and so forth. But in a nutshell, like, how would you describe the quantum or energy and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really exists. We haven't got a lot of scientific data that measures it. And again, I'll refer to my buddy, Andrew Huberman. You know, we sat down for lunch when I initially met my girlfriend, Wendy. She surprised me. I had met Andrew, and she talks him into coming to meet me for lunch. I'm like, we talk for hours. And, you know, Wendy says to him, like, is karma exist? And he kind of goes, because he's a scientist. He wants scientific data to back stuff up, peer-reviewed scientific data. And he's kind of like, yeah. He goes, yeah, I think it does. So he's a scientist. So there's something there. There's something there. And I think it's genuine energy that we really haven't understood how to entirely measure yet. But it also speaks to the idea that people feel a little more disconnected by and large over Zoom from being in person. I think there's energy that we're having trouble measuring that exists that connects people. And then you started to get into some really freaky places, because quantum physics talks about the entanglement effect. And I got no idea how these guys figure this out. But they say two objects that have become entangled energy-wise can be separated by literally light years, which is hundreds of thousands of miles. A light year, light travels 186,000 miles in a second. So God knows how far it goes in a year. But objects that are light years apart can be stimulated and simultaneously interact. So I don't know how they figured that out. But then if you start to link these ideas with karma and energy, then this intention thing and putting out vibes into the universe, you got to accept that there's something to that. And so that's why I agree with you. I think you're being very smart in adding it to your success tools.
Yeah, I just added it to the repertoire, and I appreciate you saying that. I received that. And it's so cool because I'm like you in the sense that, like, if it was beyond my senses, it's hard to fathom. But at the same time, there's too much evidence to ignore it. So you might as well play within, the rules, so to speak, or play to your favor and utilize energy, good vibes, the power of intention and all that stuff. So I love the way you said that. Thank you.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big believer in it.
Yeah, me too. We got to get you back on it for sequel. This was too much fun. The audience is growing really rapidly. I know they're going to fall in love with you in 2 seconds in case they're not already familiar with you. What's the best way for the whole audience, a million of us strong, to support you, Chris?
Yeah, let's make it a mutual support thing, a two-way street here. Subscribe to the Black Swan Group's newsletter. If you're in the U.S., you can text to sign up. The number you text to is 33777, 33777. The message you text to in the U.S., you send the message Black Swan Method, spaces between the words, it's not case sensitive, three words, Black Swan Method, to 33777. You get a request back for your email address. You get it sent to your inbox Tuesday mornings, concise, free. But it doesn't matter that it's free. What matters, it's concise and actionable. The newsletter will be the gateway to everything the Black Swan Group does. It'll take you to the website when you want to go there, blackswanltd.com. We got a ton of free training, and no matter where you are in your journey, we'll meet you there and help you move forward. The book and the newsletter, and in great conversations like yours or even your book club, this is supplemental supporting ways to jump into a community where you can gather your skills with other people in your tribe. And that's one of the things I love about your book club idea, because you're pulling together people that want to help each other get better.
That's it. Thank you so much. Amen, brother. I appreciate it. How can I personally support you, Chris?
You're doing it, man. Yeah, you're doing it with the podcast, the interview, the book club. Well, and we'll stay in touch, because there's clearly a natural synergy here.
Definitely.
I like what you're putting out, and I like the core values of what you're putting out. So, you and I will stay in touch. We'll figure out a way to collaborate, help each other's communities, which are probably two aspects of the same community, getting better, having a great time doing it.
That's it. So much love and respect for you. I could do this all day. I just want to say, Chris, you're the definition of resilience, grit, heart, empathy, and curiosity. You're the master of negotiation, and you're making the world a better place by teaching millions how to do so also. You're an unbelievable father and a role model and beacon of hope for anyone coming up today with big goals and aspirations. I could personally guarantee your best is yet to come. Keep on spreading your wings. So much love and respect for you. Thank you so much for stopping by and dropping those priceless nuggets today, Chris.
The pleasure was mine. Thanks for having me on.
That was amazing. Thank you so much, brother.
I enjoyed that conversation. Nicely done, man. I'm glad we got connected.
Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And follow me on Instagram at CraigSiegel_CLS, the YouTube channel Craig Siegel, and our website, CultivateLastingSymphony.com, where you could sign up for our email blast with all free trainings on all of our content. The best is yet to come.